good time. It never happens on a Tuesday night. In 2 weeks and I'm here in the same place. The same rhythm for most of my life.
Apart from the aptly named Tuesday Night Ladies, who come in every Saturday week and sip decaffeinated coffee and eat chicken, Kookaburra Canyon is not known for its regular customers. Rather, we host an assortment of occasional customers who come in whenever they damned well please, regular as construction work. Last night, a whole slew of the irregulars decided to show up, several of them in my section. The first irregular was a woman who got kicked out of the restaurant 2 years ago. She and her husband used to come in two or three nights a week to munch on cheese fries and fried onion and drink their liver's aquamarine. One night, my occasional infatuation, David, was waiting on them, and the woman fell face first into her steaming plate of cheese fries and started to snore. Naturally, David removed the lady's alcohol and got a manager. Much arguing ensued over how the woman wasn't too drunk, she was merely on a variety of pills that made her drowsy. Then the husband loudly threatened to wrestle my boss to decide whether or not they'd give his wife her apple teeny back. They were told they could come back whenever they liked, but neither of them would ever be served alcohol again. Last night, Cheese Fry Face came into my section, which used to be the smoking section, and lit up a cigarette. "I'm sorry," I said, "you can't smoke here. We went non-smoking about a week and a half ago." "What are you talking about? I was here 2 weeks ago and I could smoke then." "Like I said, we've been non-smoking for about a week and a half." "But I smoked here 2 weeks ago." "You're correct. 2 weeks ago, you could smoke here. A week and a half ago, we went non-smoking. You can't smoke here now. Next week, you won't be able to smoke here. In the past, you could smoke. But for the present and future, you can't smoke. This is now a non-smoking restaurant."
"So I can't smoke?"
"No."
"Can I get an apple teeny then?"
"No. Keep it up and you can't get food either." As I was walking by another one of my tables, preparing to ask them if they wanted dessert, I hear the sentence,
"Worst case scenario, I end up in prison getting butt raped all day."
The woman across from him says,
"That's worst case scenario?"
I say, "Would you like some more Sprite?" and run away. For the rest of the night, every time I went over to the table, they would be saying something like,
"I really like the movie Black Hawk Down. Did you see it?"
And I would hear,
"And I really like the movie Butt Rape Down. Did you see it?"
I almost said, while clearing their dishes, "Would you like me to butt rape that salad up for you?" They left me a nice tip for butt rapers. A few weeks ago, some coworkers were discussing whether or not a conveniently out-of-earshot waiter was gay. He was appalled when I told him. His statement,
"Just because you drive a truck every once in a while doesn't make you a truck driver."
"Right," I said, "but if you're really into big rigging." When I first started working at Kookaburra Canyon, I was determined not to be an asshole, and this can be difficult for me. I have a habit of purposely saying the wrong things to the right people in order to get laughs at their expense. I think this is why I've almost exclusively dated morons. David is not a moron. We are also still not dating. Both of these things can be attributed to his mother, the first for her superior genetics, the second for her overbearing and Catholic influence on his life. These two things, I have been assured, are mutually exclusive. He is currently angry at me for calling him a mama's boy after he broke off our third consecutive date to spend time with his mother, who he lives with, but who he, presumably, spends less time in bed with than me. I'm trying not to be overly hostile towards anyone else when Julie sides up next to me at the soda fountain and asks, "Do I look fat?" Julie is 5'4". And possibly 11 pounds. 12 if you dip her in a vat of bacon grease. Maybe. I tell her that she does look like she's put on a few pounds, but what does she expect? She's carrying my child. The next night, I am hungover like a towel on a dorm room closet. Between paperwork and the actual waiting tables, I've been working for nearly 10 hours consecutively. I'm down to my last table, a group of frat boys. Like koala bears and Elijah Wood, frat boys are cute in their natural habitat, but you wouldn't want one up close and eating in your restaurant. 15 minutes into their debauchery, I realize they hate me. I mean, they hate me. This probably has something to do with one of them being underage and trying to order a Miller High Life without a driver's license. They decide that it's my fault that they couldn't spring for a fake ID for their friend, so they start demanding extra water and soda refills and more bread and constantly wonder why their food, which they've just ordered, is taking so long. Enter Julie. It's her night off, but she stops in to meet some people after work for a few drinks. She looks a fucking amazing. You know, if you're into short chicks. One of the guys at the table starts to get huge hearts in his eyes, his tongue falls around his ankles, and his erection would have knocked the table over except for the fact that he's a frat boy, and everyone knows about frat boys and macroscopic phalluses. Frat boy number one turns to frat boy number who cares and says, "Dude, I could totally get her phone number." This starts a barrage of comments affirming their heterosexual machismo while reducing Julie to nothing more than a walking ass with tits on them, an affliction of sight prevalent in the wild frat boy. What they don't realize is that Julie has great hearing and an attitude problem. She pivots towards the table, which does little to hush the bravado of Frat Boys the Musical. As she walks by me, she pushes my order book out of my hand and kisses me quite hard. The frat boys get so quiet, you could hear soap drop in one of the communal showers where they have unprotected sex, which absolutely does not mean they are at all gay. She looks right at the table and says, "You guys are lucky my baby's daddy isn't a jealous man," and then walks away. The frat boys ask me if she's seriously my wife. "No," I tell them. "We're not even really dating. We just kind of fool around and thought it would be fun to have a kid together." The frat boys name me their king, toss me on their shoulders, and lead me into the infinite land of keggers and Madden football. They also leave me a sweet tip and ask me if my baby's mama has a sister. At least twice a week for the past year, a man and his mother come into Kookaburra Canyon for dinner. If they like you, they leave you a Saint trading card and a decent tip. If they don't like you, you get a pamphlet informing you about how Jesus can save you. So far, I have Saint Jude, Saint Peter, and 3 Saint Augustines. No one will trade with me. And never have been the recipient of the pamphlet. One of the Jesus people's biggest pet peeves is having people say, "Hey guys, how you doing tonight?" The first time I heard about this was nearly 6 months ago, when a fairly new server was completely chewed out by them about how "you guys" is offensive. I paid no attention except I spread the word to never call them guys. Tonight, our resident wise-ass Steve has them. And while I'm talking to some friends at the table next to Steve and the Jesus people, I hear him say, "Hey, you guys, what's up?" I thought the man's head was going to explode. He begins ranting about how young people these days have no respect for their elders, and words like "guys" and "dude" and "what's up" and "dogs" and "word up" are the devil's words. I wasn't paying strict attention to everything he said. I had to pay some attention to my friends. But according to Steve, the guy ended his rant by declaring, "It's expressions like those that lead impressionable girls to take coat hangers and end the lives of the perfect souls in their wombs." Well then, who knew "what's up, guys" was a slogan for the pro-choice crowd? I certainly didn't. I think that wins my most surreal overreaction ever award. I will never be able to wait on them again without bursting into laughter. Does this mean I'm going to hell? If so, what will I do with my trading cards? Giggles and her boyfriend arrived just before my shift was supposed to end. They took a seat in my section and informed me that they were waiting for 6 of their friends to show up. They ordered 2 waters, of course, and said they wanted bread on the table at all times. I got the feeling there were no other friends showing up and that they were on some sort of prison diet. An hour later, the friends showed up, all talking on their various cell phones and shaking their hands and shushing me every time I went to the table to ask if they were ready to order. Giggles was the alpha. When she was ready to order, she yelled my name across the restaurant. The table ordered a plate of cheese fries, two salads, and a bowl of clam chowder. Someone had rung in a cheese fries by mistake earlier, so there was an order sitting in the window when I got into the kitchen. Since I wanted to get these people out of the restaurant as soon as possible, I brought it right out to them and went back to the kitchen to wait for the salads and the soup. Just as the salads were coming out, one of my coworkers rushed into the kitchen and said, "I was needed at my table immediately." Giggles was no longer chattering with her boyfriend or their assorted friends. Her lips were sneered so high that I couldn't see her nose, and I'm reasonably sure there was steam coming from her eyes.
"Sir," she said, "I usually don't like to complain,"
a phrase which has never been uttered by anyone who didn't love to complain,
"but I have never been so disgusted in my life. This clam chowder you brought out is cold, has no clams in it, and the portion is ridiculously small. I demand a refund, and I want to see a manager right now. There is no excuse for this horrible food."
I did my best to keep my polite customer service smile as I said, "Miss, that's not clam chowder. It's ranch dressing." David and I decided to stop talking to each other shortly after my birthday, when he had informed me that he wasn't really gay and that our relationship was weird. I argued that only one of those things was true, and then recounted the number of times he'd asked me to put my penis inside him. My face was still scrunched with anger when I got home. Dee gave me an "aww" when I grabbed the bottle of Grey Goose from the kitchen. Then she leaned over to give me a little kiss and started talking about some of the awkward relationships she'd been in. She was in the midst of telling me something about her ex-husband when Wiz came into the room, cleared his throat, and passed her a tin of Altoids.
"Not now," she said. "I'm in the middle of a story."
"Yes, now," Wiz said. "Your breath still smells like my dick."
"My dick need no introduction. Yo, dick, don't even function.
My dick served a whole luncheon. Yo, dick, look like a munchkin.
My dick, size of a pumpkin. Yo, dick, look like Macaulay Culkin. My dick, good loving. Yo, dick, good for nothing.
My dick, bench press 350. Yo, dick, couldn't shot lift it thrifty.
My dick, pretty damn skippy.
One of the people who's been reading my blog is a 22-year-old medical student named Dimitri. He's gay, which you'd think would be my main demographic, but a majority of the people who've commented or emailed me are middle-aged women of various sexualities and supposedly straight guys. I am as intrigued by Dimitri's stories of medical school mishaps as he is by my awkward sex stories. And while I ask him all sorts of questions about science and procedures, all of his questions seem to focus on my sex life. I'm not sure I'm optimistic enough to see this as a good sign. I would suspect his questions to have some level of research to them. I'm imagining a giant grid in his Chicago apartment where number of people Adam has had sex with on the y-axis and number of times it's been awkward on the x-axis. I do not ever want to see that grid. One of the things he seemed genuinely shocked by was my answer to the questions,
"How many times have you been caught jerking off by your roommates?"
I'm an incredibly sexual person. Deviant, some might say. Still others would shout, "Whore!" One of the things I'm proud of, though, is I have, or had until I started the In Safe Mode blog, a low sexual profile and had never been caught masturbating. Oh, I've walked in on friends, roommates, the Brazilian water polo team. The point is, while I've walked in on easily dozens of people masturbating, though not at the same time, that would have been awkward, I have never been caught with my pants down. Cue ominous music. While I may have masturbated between 14 and 20 times a week, back in the good old days before I moved back to Boston, lately I've been in a serious rut. Oh, My libido isn't shrinking. It's just that I live with two roommates, one of whom has a 6-year-old child. There is nearly always someone awake in my house, usually working on the computer, which is within close visual and audio range of my bedroom. This morning marks entirely too many days or weeks, good God, I don't remember which, since the last time I had an orgasm. At around 4:30, my mentally 6-year-old, physically 30-something-year-old roommate, Wiz, finally stops playing the City of Heroes game and goes to bed. I make myself some apples and peanut butter to celebrate my domination of the room and appease my inner kindergartner. At 6, the child roommate goes off to school and his mother, the other adult roommate, Dee, heads to work. I decide to literally seize my opportunity. That's what I call him. I open up a dozen or so various porn sites, remember that pictures on the internet just aren't doing it for me these days, and open up my porn playlist on Media Player. I click on random and hit the forward button. The first movie is 20 minutes long. I decided that will be the duration I'll, pardon the pun, shoot for. About 15 minutes into the session, the phone rings. I'm waiting to find out if my book about bad gay sex experiences is going to be published. Luckily, caller ID is in sight. It's not my publisher. If it had been her, I still wouldn't have interrupted my special time with my long-neglected right hand. After all, I can legitimately claim that I'm doing research for the sequel. While I lean back from looking at the phone, I accidentally squish my left hand into the plop of peanut butter that I have yet to eat. I go to shake the peanut butter off my head. Yes, I know that doesn't work, but my brain is lacking proper blood flow at the moment, and knock the dish onto the floor. For whatever reason, my dick decides this is a great time to come, so I do, loudly and messily. There is now a broken dish, cum, and peanut butter all over the floor, and I hear footsteps. I'm not sure whether the footsteps are my roommate, Wiz, coming upstairs, or one of the people from another apartment going down the stairs into the lobby. Just in case it's my roommate, I leap up to get paper towels, only to discover that my feet have fallen asleep, and I have just enough time to yell out, "Fucker of God!" before I fall, pants around my ankles, onto the peanut butter, cum, and dish-covered floor. My shouting attracts the attention of the neighbor, who is coming down the stairs. I am briefly thankful that there is a door between us.
Are you okay in there?
Then I remember the door is not locked. Fine, I just dropped a dish. No need to come in. I realize as I made to brace my fall, I cut my right palm on one of the broken dish pieces. So now there's blood in the mix. Our floor looks like a discount tie-dyed t-shirt. God, what if my neighbor, whose name I don't even know, comes in and sees me like this? Would he laugh? Dial 911? Be aroused? I imagine my book being released posthumously.
It was the greatest marketing gimmick you could ask for, my publisher would say. A guy writes a collection of awkward sex stories and is found dead of embarrassment after a stranger walks in on a bizarre autoerotic ritual involving blood and peanut butter. It's like John Waters meets Mel Brooks in a dark alley and rapes him.
Luckily, my neighbor believes that I'm okay and leaves. I fail to pass out and die. Instead, I hobble over to the kitchen and realize we're all out of paper towels.
On the floors of Tokyo, down in London town to go-go. With the record selection and the mirror's reflection, I'm a dancing all with myself. When there's no one else inside, in the crowd and lonely.
This episode of the Safe Mode Journals, Laughing in the Abattoir, Part 2, The Irregulars, and Busted, was brought to you by The Rule of Three, by the wonderful customers at Kookaburra Canyon, and by New England Clam Chowder. Apart from its color, it has nothing in common with ranch dressing, you idiot. Intro music for this episode was Tuesday Night by Adam Hood. Incidental music was Brick Dick, a mashup of Mickey Avalon and the Commodores by DJ Magnet. Outro music, playing now, is Dancing With Myself by Billy Idol. For more information about how to buy All My Exes Live In Sex Flicks, which is volume one of the Insafe Mode journals, in print, or how to eventually order volume two, Laughing in the Abattoir, which you are currently listening to, check out my website, www.crookedtreehouse.com, or you can email any questions you have about things that I might know the answer to at insafemode@gmail.com. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got to go walk the dinosaur.
Chance I'd ask a woman to dance and not be dancing with myself.